Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 27th day of February, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And there's so much going on today that we're going to have to review a lot of it just with headlines and brief summaries. But I do want to start with a couple pieces that are, well, let's just say, over the top in irony to set the stage. Like this one from Kristen Taylor at the Gateway Pundit. Surprise, 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 it says. The woman who attacked a Massachusetts man because he dared to wear a MAGA hat turns out to be a 41-year-old Brazilian illegal alien. She was arrested by ICE on Tuesday. I guess committing high-profile crimes that go viral on the web, even if the criminally negligent waste stream doesn't want to talk about it, does have its downside. Then there's this from Sweden, where the image of a Muslim woman wearing a hijab on a digital advertising board at the entrance to the Swedish city of Gävle seems to have made the point that even the politically correct socialist Swedes eventually decide they've had enough. Director of Communications for the Gävle municipality, Johan Adolfsson, said, "We select people who've been nominated by the residents to represent those who live in Gävle, and the Muslim woman, Susan Hindi, is one of 100 residents nominated for the campaign." But then he went on to say there have been lots of reactions to the advertisement. Most of them, folks, even translated into English. I can't really read on air. People express that it's wrong, that Islam is a threat, and that there are big problems with the hijab, said the communications director. We've received hundreds of emails and phone calls over the weekend. It's unpleasant because the insults are directed towards me and Susan Hindi personally. Then, he said, it's true that the board was vandalized on Friday and completely destroyed during the weekend. It was shot up, as a matter of fact. After a number of people suggested that the board shouldn't only be shot at, but wrecked completely. Do you have plans to change the campaign? He was asked. Want to guess the answer, folks? Absolutely not. Everyone is welcome here. Except just maybe for the few native Swedes that still remain. There's another nuclear war front that's been rearing its ugly head over the last few days as well, between Pakistan and India. That in itself isn't new, but the escalation certainly is. First, a nice summary headline from Zero Hedge. This is unprecedented territory, they quote a Bloomberg analyst as saying, referring to a shootdown by Pakistan of two Indian fighter jets in what they call a dramatic border conflict escalation. The analyst said, we haven't had tit-for-tat airstrikes between India and Pakistan since the 1971 war, and we don't know what will come from this. The Daily Mail's coverage says Pakistan's top military chiefs are due to meet to discuss a response to a bombing raid that followed by India, and they've alluded to the country's own nuclear capabilities, after India said its warplanes killed a very large number of fighters when they struck a military training camp inside Pakistan on Tuesday, whereupon the Pakistanis threatened their own surprise. They said they would respond at a time and place of their choice, with a military spokesman even alluding to the nuclear arsenal, highlighting the escalation in hostile rhetoric from both sides since the suicide bombing in Kashmir earlier this month. The India Times follows that up with a story that says Delhi, Mumbai, and five other cities have been put on highest alert for the next 72 hours. While Zero Hedge tells us that stocks slide on India-Pakistan hostilities as traders are bracing for a day of fireworks. Meanwhile, President Trump is in Hanoi meeting with the rocket man, Kim Jong-un. He said they've had a very good dialogue, and Trump and Kim are scheduled to hold a joint signing ceremony tomorrow in Hanoi, 2:05 a.m. on the East Coast, but the details of all of that are still TBD. Speculation, though, runs rampant, including whether the signing ceremony will involve a ceremonial end to the 60-plus-year-old Korean War. Meanwhile, though, on the impeachment while we still can front, perjurer Michael Cohen is scheduled to testify. Yeah, test the lie really is the better term nowadays. Before various collections of Congress traitors over the next day or two, I do have to wonder whether they'll bother with an oath. Many, if not most, of the Congress critters in attendance have already violated theirs, and Michael Cohen's actually been disbarred, for crying out loud, by the New York bar for perjury. So you do have to wonder why any of them even bother with the pretense about an oath anymore. And true to form, the most damaging stuff that he's going to parrot has already been released to the waste stream media in prepared testimony. And guess who probably prepared it? Cohen is going to tell the House Oversight Committee, yes, this just in, I guess it's past tense now, although we knew it before. An ashamed Cohen told the House Oversight Sick Committee that Trump is a racist, a con man, and a cheat. Whether any of that is true or not is a big question, but he certainly ought to know. I'm guessing before this is all over, we'll be told he dressed in blackface and a KKK hood, probably at the same time, and kicks little puppies, too. And his first test of lie may have already been exposed. Arthur Schwartz tweeted that Cohen said, quote, under oath, I didn't want to go to the White House. Liar, says Schwartz. He complained to me on numerous occasions about the fact that POTUS didn't offer him a job at the White House. But I gotta admit, folks, I'm kind of surprised the FBI didn't, say as chief counsel. There is an update from the live hearings on Zero Hedge as I do the recording. Now that Cohen has finished reading his prepared statement, it says, what's expected to be a lengthy Q&A session has begun. Chairman Cummings started it off by warning Cohen that lying wouldn't be tolerated at this hearing. Well, at least not by him. That's the thing they're best at. And maybe that's a warning that he'd better stick to the agreed prepared text. Who knows? Before launching into a review of the documents submitted by Cohen to try to make the claim that Trump did, in fact, know about the hush money payments to Stormy Daniels. And all I have to add to that, folks, is big blankety blankin' deal. I mean, really, it's not like he raped her, hint, hint, or had anybody killed to cover up bigger crimes. Or for that matter, that paying a hooker to keep quiet is any different than paying her to do whatever she did to begin with. Especially since it obviously had nothing to do with his campaign funding. He'd have just paid it out of pocket change. Continues Tyler Durden's summary, Republican ranking member Jim Jordan followed that up by pointing out the litany of crimes committed by Cohen, including tax evasion and bank fraud, not to mention perjury, which he didn't commit to, quote, protect the president and his family. And this is almost, but not quite funny, apparently, says Zero Hedge, Cohen may not be the only one trying to settle old scores during the hearing. Congressman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, remember her? She was exposed by the DNC for leaks leading to an internal effort to rig the primaries in Clinton's favor. Lost her job for a whole bunch of lies surrounding that one, but hey, there's always Congress. And she had the chutzpah to ask a number of questions about the Trump campaign contacts with the dreaded Russians. In response, today's admitted perjurer insisted that Roger Stone lied about directly consulting the president about upcoming publication of hacked DNC emails by, drumroll please, WikiLeaks. And no, let's not talk about who hacked them or whether or not they might have been killed on the streets of D.C. The disgraced former DNC chair also asked whether Trump would have colluded with a foreign government to, quote, win at all costs. Hey, wasn't that her job? Cohen then said Trump's desire to win would have, quote, had him work with anyone, unquote. With this, though, notes Tyler Durden, Cohen has apparently painted himself into a corner, because he just insisted that Trump never expected to win, but then at the same time said he would do anything to win. So, which is it? And, oh, by the way, so much for the insistence of Chairman Cummings that Dems not fixate on the already discredited Russia story. Perhaps because of problematic observations like this one from John Cardillo, who said Debbie Wasserman Schultz has just inadvertently thrown oil in Elijah Cummings' water, because she got Cohen to admit that Roger Stone didn't work for Trump and that Trump didn't direct Stone to do anything. But not to worry, folks. The progressives still control the ministries of truth, and they're not going to point out contradictions like that, don't you know? Their audience doesn't have the attention span for it anyway. Michael Snyder, though, of the Economic Collapse blog is worried. He writes today that all of this could be very, very, very bad news for Trump because Michael Cohen was Donald Trump's fixer, he says, for more than a decade, but now he's turned completely against Trump, and that means for the witch hunter Mueller, folks, think Stockholm Syndrome. And on Wednesday, he's now giving the House Oversight Committee as much damaging information about Trump as he possibly can. And here we have to note, of course, true or not. In fact, he's claiming that Trump committed criminal conduct after he entered the White House. So of all the challenges that the president has faced so far, this could potentially, he writes, be the most difficult by a very wide margin. Because if Cohen gives the Democrats the ammunition he's supposed to, they will likely attempt to initiate formal impeachment proceedings. And they've been looking for an excuse all along. Who are we kidding? When you are an attorney, says Snyder, you often learn the deepest, darkest secrets of your clients. And the advantage here for Cohen is they don't even have to be true, folks, because the Snyder notes, once upon a time, before Mueller, there was something called attorney-client privilege, but Cohen's headed for prison anyway. He's already been disbarred for lying under oath anyway. And the only consequences he seems to care about now are those threatened by, yeah, Robert Mueller. Over and over in the article, Michael Snyder suggests that the point is Cohen is supposed to give the Democrats the justification they need to try to impeach Trump. We've already dealt with the so-called hush money payment. The claim is that Cohen's going to provide documents to Congress proving that Donald Trump wrote a check from his personal account, BFD, to reimburse that crooked lawyer, and maybe he should have in hindsight just stiffed him, regarding acts that no one, including Snyder notes, are actually campaign expenses that should be reported to the FEC, unless we're talking about somebody who wasn't supposed to win the election anyway. I mean, really, folks, we're hardly talking the Clinton Foundation here now, are we? But wait, there's more, writes Michael Snyder. In addition to the so-called criminal conduct, Cohen also plans to allege that Trump, quote, made racist remarks in front of him. Among other things, the racist remarks included him questioning the intelligence of African Americans. Well, folks, I have to put it this way. Michael Cohen proves that there are, in fact, stupid white guys. Much of the seventh floor of the FBI Hoover building makes the same point. Senator Pocahontas has proven that there are stupid white women, even if they claim to be stupid Indian women. And come on, let's not even mention Sandy of the Occasional Cortex when it comes to, whatever she claims to be today.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid?
Stupid is stupid does, Miss Blue.
I guess.
And I guess there are stupid people of all races and sexes. But I'm not sure what Michael Cohen's testimony proves about anything. Snyder worries that if Cohen's testimony sticks to the script, quote, I anticipate that the major news networks, he says, will be full of talk about impeachment over the coming days. White House spokeswoman Sarah Sanders told the press that it's, quote, pathetic to see this man given yet another opportunity to spread his lies. She called Cohen a disgraced felon and said, quote, it's laughable that anyone would take a convicted liar like Cohen at his word, and pathetic to see him given yet another opportunity to spread his lies, unquote. And for his part, the president tweeted from Korea that Michael Cohen was one of many lawyers who represented me. Unfortunately, he had other clients also. He was just disbarred by the state Supreme Court for lying and fraud. He did bad things unrelated to Trump, and he's lying in order to reduce his prison time. And he noted, even using Crooked's lawyer. Meaning he's being advised by one of the worst, Lanny Davis, former contributor for The Hill, who also worked as an advisor for the rapist president, Bill Clinton, and those who were supposed to be king after him. And it's not just socialists in Washington that want to believe the lie. Invasion denial continues as well. The new leftist governor of Wisconsin, Tony Evers, has ordered the state's National Guard troops to withdraw from the U.S. border with Mexico. And he says he doesn't believe there's enough evidence of a national emergency to justify keeping them there. Because it's kind of hard to see what's going on in Arizona from the northern border anyway, especially if you don't want to. Some members of the Guard, though, criticized the governor for what they called a political decision, in spite of the potential repercussions to them. The economic attempt to crack down on the libertarian, conservative, and Bible-believing right continues as well. We're seeing more and more stories like this almost on a daily basis nowadays. Here's one from Jake Lloyd at Infowars.com about how banks are now denying service to conservatives. Economic warfare, it says, is being waged on Trump supporters. Infowars notes that they were among the first. And in case you've forgotten, which is certainly the waste stream intent, that's one of Alex Jones's websites. But now what's going on is still only the beginning. The deep state says their story, intended to use us as a way to desensitize the public to ever-increasing amounts of censorship. And whether you like Alex Jones or hate him, there's no denying that they nailed that one. Are they also much demonized, for obvious reasons, Jihad Watch and Robert Spencer? The PayPal top dog, they say, admits their partnership with the hard-left smear machine, SPLC, to blacklist dissidents from the leftist agenda. And some of you regular listeners know that if I was to pick from among the very worst of the very worst of the leftist liars and propagandists out there, the SPLC, a.k.a. the Socialist Propaganda Lie Center, would probably be at the very top of that list. I've watched and covered their perfidy for over 20 years at this point, dating back to the time when they scurrilously labeled some of my Jewish conservative friends as anti-Semites, for crying out loud. So to say these lying scumbags have no shame is to offer them an undeserved compliment. Says Robert Spencer's story today, the SPLC's vicious use of its so-called hate group list to demonize and destroy legitimate groups that dissent from the leftist agenda has gotten so bad that even the WAPO has taken notice. And here he points to a story from the WAPO, which admits the SPLC has even, quote, undermined its own credibility with a couple of blunders, in which writer David Montgomery's lengthy piece, and he still wants to admire the SPLC, admits that some of their positions are, quote, frankly disquieting, because they seem to be able to characterize expressions of truth as hate. Spencer himself, who joins a number of good people on the SPLC's hate list, it's gotten to be almost a rite of passage for a high-profile constitutionalist or libertarian, much less Bible believer, suggests that their propaganda being frankly disquieting isn't the criterion. Are they based on fact or not? Are they reasonable or not? And he says, quote, there's a massive problem with the SPLC demonizing as hate what are indeed, at the very least, defensible expressions of truth. Today, though, he quotes Charlie Nash of Breitbart, who notes that PayPal CEO Dan Shulman has admitted during an interview with the Wall Street Journal that PayPal works with the far-left bigots at the SPLC when it considers blacklisting conservatives. Asked by the Wall Street Journal what values, sick, PayPal identifies with, their CEO replied, quote, probably the most important value to us is diversity and inclusion, unquote, especially when it comes to excluding people they don't agree with. They don't just exclude them, however, they attempt to economically destroy them. And that, folks, is the public-private partnership of genuine fascism in action. He did admit, though, that the so-called line between, quote, free speech and hate, nobody teaches it to you in college. Well, he's wrong there. Now they do, folks. And hint, if it's constitutional, biblical, or in any way conservative or anti the leftist knee-jerk agenda, yes, it's hate speech. Anyway, he says, nobody's defined it in the law, which is why they intend to, and if you don't like it, they'll cut off your funding. During the interview, Shulman also admitted that the far-left SPLC helps to inform, quote, PayPal's decisions, unquote. Kind of like they tried to define who was a terrorist to the terrorists at the FBI. Notes Robert Spencer, the SPLC, which reportedly works with Amazon, Gulag, to Facebook, and Twitter, was forced to pay a $3.3 million settlement to anti-extremist activist Majid Nawaz last year after the evil organization included him on a list of so-called anti-Muslim extremists, despite the fact that Nawaz is a Muslim himself. Well, folks, at least their evil consistency remains obvious. That victory in the lawsuit prompted at least 60 other organizations to also consider lawsuits against the Socialist Propaganda Liars Committee, and in June, a WAPO columnist, as we've already noted, declared the SPLC has, quote, lost all credibility. And that's not all, folks, because PayPal keeps up in the ante. They've now blacklisted WikiLeaks, InfoWars, conservative commentator and Vice co-founder Gavin McGinnis, political activist Tommy Robinson, investigative journalist Laura Loomer, blogger Roosh V, free speech social network Gab, and YouTube alternative BitChute, as well as a black metal music label. And let's not forget Robert Spencer's Jihad Watching Notes and Pamela Geller's American Freedom Defense Initiative, which were at least temporarily blacklisted as well. But there is at least a bit of good news on the anti-free speech front. Until they get cut off, too, Project Veritas founder James O'Keefe told his Twitter followers this week, stay tuned, because he will be releasing a video of a to-Facebook insider who'll blow the whistle on that socialist media company's censorship secrets. Quote, Facebook insider speaks out, hate speech, censorship, big brother. Everyone, he says, expected not to talk about these things. But the document leak is coming soon, said O'Keefe, so stay tuned. And earlier on Tuesday, notes the same story, former Breitbart London editor Raheem Kassam was informed that his two Facebook page, also with 150,000 followers, was removed. Donald Trump Jr. tweeted about Facebook's unfair targeting of conservatives, and to Facebook responded by saying, "They removed Mr. Kassam's account." Say it with me, folks. In error. Prompting Mr. Kassam to tweet in turn, "How come is it that only right-wing and conservatives' accounts get removed in error, pending so-called investigations? And who watches the watchers," unquote, when it comes to the public-private partnerships with Big Brother Big Tech? Well, I guess now we're seeing the answer. Even bigger liars, like the SPLC. Personally, folks, I'm starting to think Joseph Goebbels was no less trustworthy. And before I could even tie the ribbons on that one, this came over the wire. Days after conservative UK activist Tommy Robinson upstaged an upcoming BBC hit piece on him with his own documentary to Facebook, guess what? Banned him from their platform, including Instagram, after a BBC contributor contacted them. Robinson's hour-long expose, called Panadrama, features undercover footage of BBC journalist Sick John Sweeney making racist and classist statements and reveals how the BBC collaborated with a radical far-left organization called Hope, Not Hate. And guess who funded that? At least in part. Yeah, say it with me. George Soros, in order to take Robinson down. And in the expose, the BBC is also accused of bribery, blackmail, and intimidation tactics against former Robinson employees to invent stories. And isn't this increasingly sounding so familiar against the former English Defense League leader? So let's start to wrap things up today with at least a quick review of the latest on the continuing economic meltdown. Starting with another reminder of, gee, that again, the financial apocalypse. Says Max Slavo, global markets are now facing a $12 trillion reckoning. The problem, he suggests, is staring the financial apocalypse right in the face and has the potential to accelerate the coming stock market crash. It refers to a recent report from the CBO warning that deficits will total almost $12 trillion starting in 2020. Just shy of 4.5% are not quite twice the historic average over the past 50 years, meaning there'll come a time when no one wants to buy that debt, and it's approaching quickly. Let's not forget, we are, after all, talking about the biggest debt bomb in all of human history. But almost, says Dave Kranzler, not to worry, because the stock market is back in idiot mode again. I don't know, he begins, if it was the intent of the Fed, but Jerome Powell has managed to trigger a rush into stocks more frenzied than the one that engulfed the last days of the dot-com and tech bubble. The vertical ascent since Christmas in the Dow SPX is unprecedented on a percentage basis over an 8-week period of time. All sense of logic, sound analysis, and fear of risk has now disappeared. I don't know, he suggests, how much longer this move will last, but it will likely be followed by a spectacular reversal. Only thing we can say with 100% certainty, though, is that the stock market continues to dislocate from economic reality, which is a situation that, well, sooner or later will be corrected, with the market repricing significantly lower to a level that better reflects the deterioration in both the global and U.S. economy. And that's not all, he suggests. The housing market is a real caution, too, especially when most households are overburdened with debt, living paycheck to paycheck. Wolf Richter at Wall Street says there are other issues to pay attention to as well, like total inventories at merchant wholesalers. He quotes the warehouse operator, CEO of Pacific Mountain Logistics, to say, "In 30 years, I've never seen anything like this." Inventories of both durable and non-durable goods are building up, almost like pressure in a boiler. And the problem is, while increasing inventories are counted as a business investment and added to GDP growth, which is what happened most of last year, conversely, the inevitable decline in inventories will need to be subtracted from GDP growth, well, unless they change the metrics again. Something has to give, though, is the bottom line. And finally, another story that we've heard before, and we'll no doubt hear again, Bill Fleckenstein via King World News is one of several warning about what's really happening with inflation. Hint, you can't trust the Fed, and you certainly can't trust the 2% inflation numbers they've been pushing. There's a lot more to how they fudge the figures, of course, but I like his summary. They'll gut you in the end, so be prepared for it. Be planning for it. And I guess you'd have to say, remember what's real. That'll do it for today. Thanks, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.